Welcome, everybody. As I've said before, my commitment to the theme of the conference this year, I tested positive for COVID the other day. So this is what my voice is today. It's a little bit different every day. You can kind of hear it among the different podcasts. Today, it sounds like it's got holes in it. So it's a little bit of a difference there. So this is our third day. And before we get into the particulars of our conversation with you this morning, I have a few announcements to go over with you. All the presentation times are Eastern, and check to see if this is your first day at the conference. Each slot of presentations have their own Zoom, and there's a moderator in every room. And so if you're a presenter, the moderator will help you in terms of giving you the privileges to share your slides or whatever else you're putting up on the screen, and then kind of giving you that gentle 5 minutes and transitioning into the different talks. We try to keep each of the parallel presentations in the different rooms kind of going at the same time, so you can jump from room to room. If in the chances that there is a loss of internet connectivity, ask you to jump to another room, and we should get it back up as soon as we can. Weather here in South Florida is a little bit wonky today, so we'll see how that goes in terms of that. We have a couple of special sessions today besides the panel plenary this morning from 12:15 to 1:15. Quirkos, Dan Turner will be presenting the latest, greatest of what's going on with Quirkos. We've had Max QDA was yesterday and InVivo on Thursday. And we're just so thankful for the participation of these wonderful software developers and providers. They have been a great part. I think Adam, you said it was like 9 years we've been working with the folks, and they've been supporting us through this process. And I think our communities are nicely interwoven. So we just thank them for that. But if you got a chance, 12:15 to 1:15 today, Dan Turner. Excuse me. From 3:20 to 3:45, there is a informational session on the NSU Qualitative Research Certificate Program. Bruce Leah and Robin Cooper will be there, pop in there as well. And then from 4 to 5 today, it's the TQR Editorial Board meeting and informational. You don't have to be on the board to come to it. Sally will recruit you if you're not on the board. We will want to continue to invite people to find many ways that you can participate in our TQR community. There's still the opportunity to write a review for your experience at the conference. It's on the tqr.nova.edu page. And you just have to click there and find out more information about how to write. It's up to 2,000 words, written in a personal style of your experience here at the conference. Adam, do you want to talk about the last email they'll be getting from you about the conference and what will be in there?
Sure.
To make the conference even better?
Sure. Early next week, as usual from our past conferences, we'll be sending out a post-conference email that will include a link to the conference website that we're creating. So all the presentations that you all have been sending in will be uploaded there at some point. We'll also be including a link to an online survey just to gather some feedback from you all. You'll see the call for next year in that email as well. And any other resources that I've previously sent out during the past 2 days, I'll be sure to include in that. So if for some reason you don't receive an email from me by, I would say, Tuesday, please reach out. I know there's been some hiccups in terms of maybe some emails not being cleared when I send them. So just feel free to reach out to me probably Tuesday or Wednesday if you haven't received anything by that point.
Thanks, Adam. And you've been asking folks to send you their PowerPoints as well. How's that going?
Yeah, no, it's going great. We've received quite a few. Yeah. If you're interested in having your presentation posted on our conference website, you can send the PDF version to me at tqr@nova.edu. I'll go ahead and post that in the chat as well. And that's how I will be, I'll be uploading the ones that I received to our conference website.
I noticed one of the comments below, what's the distribution in terms of different countries represented in our 1,000 plus people this year?
I could probably figure that out in about 30 seconds. So if you filibuster for me, for 30 seconds and I can get you an answer.
Do you mean that I have the ability to go on and on? Is that what you're saying, Adam? I talk a lot. Is that it?
I can jump in with something. No. You're looking it up. I went to as many presentations as I could go to, meaning that I couldn't be in two places at once. And I thought they were amazing. And so I'm so appreciative of our presenters, and they were inspiring. They were provocative. And Ron's right. I was recruiting. So
you still are.
I'm still recruiting for reviewers and to be other members and contributing to our TQR community. So I wanted to say that before we got started with our talking.
I also went to many workshops. We always try to go to different ones. And I also want to shout out to the people who came to the workshops. They were very considerate and appreciative, asked very interesting questions, were very supportive of the presenters. And that's another hallmark of TQR, is that we support one another and we find ways to encourage what people are doing, regardless if it's what we would do or if it's in a different field. We find ways to be appreciative.
I definitely agree. Adam's a shy person. He doesn't like the limelight, but one of the things that's kind of a superpower is the way he puts the different presentations together and creates the different rooms. You know, they're not all the same. There's a little bit of variety in there, and I just really enjoy them. And I think Sally and Dan, what you're saying, it's the community that makes it happen in terms of the presentations and the sharing. And there's just it seems I almost think like everyone must be therapists, you know, because there's kind of a sharing, caring kind of quality to the presentations and that. So anyway, so I just want to go and get started. We'll kind of so if you've seen the previous two plenaries, the one that we had on Thursday, we had three folks that were talking about their experience as qualitative researchers, teachers, practitioners, writers, and where they were seeing things going as far as this post-COVID world. And then yesterday we had three representatives from software companies talking about their experience. It was interesting. On Thursday, we probably talked more about technology than we did on Friday in terms of the effects and what sort of things seem to stick and will kind of persist going forward, and what things that people started that were new and things like that. So today, I'll introduce myself and go to Sally and Dan and Adam. And then we want to kind of repeat that a little bit, talk about what was going on at TQR 2018-19, what happened over the next few years, and where we see things going. So I'm Ron Shinai. I'm co-editor-in-chief of the Qualitative Report.
I'm Adam Rosenthal. You've probably seen my name in your email inbox quite often over the last 2 days and weekly, and I'm the community director for the Qualitative Report.
I'm Sally St. George, professor emerita from the University of Calgary in Calgary, Alberta, and I've been with the Qualitative Reports since the 90s.
Yeah.
And I'm Dan Wolf. I'm married to Sally, who's sitting next to me. Also a retired professor of social work at the University of Calgary, and enjoying every minute of that new status. I find myself to be no less busy, but I'm now able to use my time to do things that I really want to do, and I don't have to do things I don't want to do, like faculty meetings, et cetera, et cetera.
Time well spent. Well, I kind of want to call it Adam first, that we were, what was going on? We had a workshop schedule. Why don't you talk about how quickly we had to sort of pivot as COVID hit, because it was amazing what we had to do back then in terms of our workshops and conferences and so forth.
Sure. Yeah, so in my world, I'm responsible for the website maintenance, for coordinating events, for doing social media, for workshops, conferences. And then I also help Ron on the back end with managing some of the review process and communicating with editors and reviewers. And so one of those things that I mentioned was workshops, and we had decided to start a workshop series in early to mid, probably late 2019. And we were planning travel for Dr. Jonathan Smith. And then obviously 2020 came and COVID hit, and we had to change the format in which we were approaching that workshop. At first, we just canceled it. And then we realized that COVID was not leaving us anytime soon. And so we, in September of 2021, we decided to move forward with a virtual format of that workshop, not knowing what that would look like, what the response would be. And so we've just been learning through trial and error, you know, what has worked, what hasn't, what has been some of the challenges. And so for us, we've seen certainly some pros in that, where broader access to you all, you know, people can't always fly to Florida, it's expensive. And so doing these online, we've been able to access an audience that we wouldn't have reached had we had it in person. Lower costs as well, not only for us, but for you all, because if you all were planning on coming here, now there's no lodging costs, there's no food cost and things like that. But things that we've had to work on when it's come to pivoting in that regard have been, there seems to be less engagement for the virtual component of things. And so we're always trying to tinker with how we do things, you know, maybe different activities or timings. It's a less personable process also. So we're learning as we go, even though we're a few years into this. It seems like, and I've said this to some of you all before, but a virtual component of TQR is here to stay. You know, we would love to get back to in-person, and we will in some form, but we've seen how much access we're able to provide for folks all over the world with its virtual component. So it's here to stay, but now it's trying to figure out how to bring that in-person back as well. And so that's just one aspect from my side and how I've been working through the current and the post-COVID world in terms of TQR.
I guess so, to jump in from the journal perspective, we've not seen a lot change over the time period. Now we have like I just counted again this morning, 117 papers since 2019, where COVID is mentioned at least once in the papers. So there's definitely, in terms of what people are writing about, that's probably the biggest change that we've seen. We're kind of transdisciplinary. We get papers from healthcare, business, psychology, government, education. And so looking at the kinds of papers we've been receiving during the COVID era, and I think we'll probably continue, you can see it as well in the presentations here at this conference, is in terms of a variety of papers. And some papers, it seems that it was the basic study. It just happened to be conducted during COVID. And so there were some sort of nuances, some COVID aspects of it. Other papers are much more the person's experience with COVID, how that affected, how that changed their lives. So there's that kind of paper. And then the third is what people had to do, the adjustments they had to make, the innovations they came up with in order to do a variety of kinds of qualitative research. I mean, obviously, if you're doing interview style, it's not a lot of difference. We had a great presentation yesterday afternoon about how to create relationship in Zoom interviews, taking the time to get to know somebody, just as if you were going to their house. You know the thing, setting up your microphone and things like that, and you know, dropping the batteries, all the kind of clumsy things I have a tendency to do. And, you know, just looking and seeing in their rooms and getting to get them to know that way, that well. So that's what we saw, a lot of those types of papers. But what people are also doing, and it's interesting, a lot of it's, arts-based work. Photo voice seems to be something that we're seeing more of, that people are using that, the kind of autoethnographic, getting the cooperation, the collaboration with the participants to get that thicker description, and kind of the, you know, qualitative ethnographic interviewing, producing that kind of rich data of the pictures. A lot more artwork. We're seeing a lot more artwork where the authors are asking the participants to draw and to express themselves. I know Rana's on here. Her work is a good example of the artistic work. Her research has always had that aspect to it. And she's done a recent paper with us as well. So those are the things that we're seeing as far as are as far as the paper is concerned. So, you know, I know, Dan, what your impressions are of what we're seeing as far as the work we work with.
I think people were taking advantage, those who were teaching, to take advantage of working together with their students to study their experiences as they were going along. And what were some of the effects of COVID on the learning, teaching, interactions, and that kind of thing. So I thought, and maybe those are, you know, because those papers came to me, that there was a lot about teaching, about being in the classroom, about adjusting. The other thing that I noticed about COVID is because I think movement was so restricted, and even though people were making changes and were really, really busy, people were finishing their papers. I would probably get 10 rewrites a week over COVID time. So people were continuing. They thought, well, I have time and I need to get my work done. And so with having that kind of a volume, it allowed me to, I think, to see some new patterns in what was taking place and the learning and the things that we still need to shore up with our authors to help them present the best research in the best ways that they can.
I think I've noticed over the last few years, maybe this is just a consequence of the way the papers were distributed to the three of us to work with, was a lot of papers were coming from countries where English is not the first language. And that's a real challenge, you know, because I know for the writers, you know, they're trying to present their work in English, which is not easy to do. So they're negotiating the topic, they're negotiating the methodology, they're also negotiating the language. And I'm limited by my ability only to speak English. So I found that to be challenging, but I felt that the authors were really working very hard, you know, amongst themselves or getting editors to help with the English presentation. So I really saw the spread of articles coming in from many, many different countries, which I thought was exciting and fascinating, but it was also frustrating, you know, for as an editor and as an author to kind of communicate in a language that's not smooth. So, but I felt like that was part of our mission, is to figure that out, to figure out ways that these folks who are doing qualitative research in Indonesia or Pakistan or other Bangladesh, that there be ways, Iran, that there be ways that we handle this issue so that we can present this to the world in English. I still think that there's some problems with English being considered the primary language. There's lots of complications with that and kind of an unfairness with that privilege. But it's just one of the challenges we have in dealing with a real global audience, not only for the journal, but you look at this conference, you know, it's amazing that some people are up in the middle of the night, you know, to come to this.
So I think COVID time gave the four of us time to examine patterns more thoroughly. You know, again, Dan and I were on sabbatical and then we retired. So we ended up having a little bit more less time with meetings on Zoom. So that was advantageous for us. But when we could see patterns for the papers that were being submitted to us and what probably we could contribute to emerging authors and researchers. And then we started, if it's okay, Ron, to start going into the future, because we would meet, we would brainstorm. And that was really fun.
Yeah, the diversity of our papers continues to impress. And I like what Sally said, we kind of have a period of time we weren't getting much many papers on teaching and learning, qualitative research. We started seeing more of that coming up. This last year, we received the most papers we've ever received, 691 submissions in 2022. I think in December, was it December, Adam? We had 77 papers come in.
I believe so.
Right. So, and very diverse all over the world. This year, we're up to papers from authors from 106 different countries. Each year, we get five or six new countries. Rwanda was one of the new ones this year. And the papers, there's a lot of challenges. You know, we get some papers where you scratch your head a little bit when it's all statistics and why they didn't think we were a qualitative research journal and everything is a statistical analysis. We get some of those papers. Back in the day, we used to get a lot of chemistry ones because they do qualitative analysis, you know, moles and things like that. We get a lot of papers where there are significant developmental issues in terms of, you know, again, what we have our biases and what we feel are, you know, what we want to see in a well-reported research study. Mm-hmm. And we definitely see that there are good developments in the sense that now it's rather common, where one time it wasn't common, for the authors to talk about themselves in the papers. We feel the self of the researcher is very important. And we would get paper after paper, there'd be no mention of who the people were. I could read the author note, but what did you do? What was your reference points in doing the study? So we do know that people are reading the papers in TQR, and we do get a lot of repeat customers there. And sometimes it's disappointing. We get a paper back from a new paper from an author we worked with before, and some of the same developmental elements are there. And I said, you know, maybe we're too directive. We're kind of like Google Maps. We'll get you there, but you don't know how you got there. You know, you're turning left, turning right, and oh, how did I get here? You may not be able to do it on your own. So that's the things that we want trying to struggle with is how we can help get the word out. And so we were talking before about the Got a Minutes, the videos that we were doing, and Adam has been very influential in terms of getting us to try different channels of communication at the conference, have the workshops, have the journal. But Adam, why don't you talk about what we're trying to do to, and I think the key words are access. What we're trying to do is to get information out to folks to be as helpful as we can about doing qualitative research.
Sure, yeah. I think somebody mentioned it yesterday that we've been on the direction to go towards some of these new avenues, but COVID has helped speed that up, right? And so we've been testing out, like you guys have seen, some of the podcast platforms, the YouTube platforms, and it's, and I'm sure Sally and Dan will talk about this right after me, but it's been an attempt to give broader access to folks in terms of different ways to learn. And so we'll continue to build our library of resources, and we'll continue to complement that with other initiatives that we're hoping to start here. But yeah, we thought that it would be a great idea to start using some of our content to create podcasts in terms of audio versions on how to do things. The You Got It, You Got a Minute videos were something that we recorded years ago. And like Ron said, they were like the forgotten bunch. So it's something that we found that could be a great learning tool, a reusable object to share in different ways. And so as we continue down this path, I think you guys will see that over the next year, we'll have many more resources coming through those channels. What makes them great is that they're free. They can be accessed by, you know, all over the world. And hopefully that will complement some of the other initiatives that we're hoping to build here at TQR.
Well, TQR is just, for me, TQR is a model of innovation and flexibility. When we started with Ron way back when, you know, the two or three years into the initiation, it was a paper journal. It was coming out in printed format. And early on, Ron said we need to go online. So that was a huge, huge move before other journals had thought of doing that. And then 14 years ago, I guess now, started these conferences. They were in person and now they've become virtual. Now they'll probably become both. They'll be, do some virtual things and some in-person things. These workshops that are being formed, podcasts, these Got a Minute. So there's, and I think Adam has been really helpful in guiding us in how to do these kinds of new things. I think Ron has an inherent ability to understand these things, but he's an unusual older guy. Usually these are younger people who are into these things. So Adam has been absolutely pivotal in helping us understand how to do these things and to have the courage to try them. So I do think access, open, we talk about being open access. And that's kind of a buzzword, and it is. We're available worldwide. You can download the stuff, et cetera. It's free. But there's a lot to the word access. And sometimes we're still not accessible enough. And so we're always looking for ways that we could put our ideas out there in different ways that could be useful to qualitative research interests all over the world. And it's not just the journal itself in terms of articles and publishing. It's so much more than that now. It's interactions with people. This particular conference, this online version, I thought when we went to online, I wondered if it would have any ability to do what we did in person. And even though there's some limitations, I still think there's a spirit that exists in this online version that is like the in-person thing. So I really think that we've been able to kind of capture this interaction or this networking, the scale of who we can talk to. I mean, there's people from all over the world all the time in these workshops. And so you would never have that ability if we were an in-person conference.
So I want to take up the spirit of TQR and fill in some of the blanks, because we're very good, like everybody else, at getting excited about the things we've decided to do and the things we've done and the things we've been successful with and kind of the end products. But it's the middle for me, the middle section, what I usually call the black box, how we decided to do things, that I think is really important. So over our careers, Dan and I have developed what we call research as daily practice. We're family therapists and we needed to know things more quickly than traditional research would allow us to come to know and make changes. And so we have changed kind of our emphasis. And so it's research as daily practice. We're researching in the moment. So even though I said brainstorming, for example, earlier, our stuff wasn't just like, oh, let's just throw out ideas. We look at patterns. We look at what the gaps are, just like hopefully good researchers do. And so we took our own advice and followed our own inclinations to be good researchers. And we examine things. Sometimes we examine them informally, like maybe in a conversational session. Adam will say, hey, this is what I'm noticing. Ron will say, this is what I'm noticing. And then we try to shore up things with suggestions. But we also are going to take and go forward now with, I think, some more, well, they'll probably still be informal, but more systematic studies so that we can make informed decisions that are not just, I think this might work, but, you know, really call forward from what we're learning. So Ron had talked about some of the initial papers we're getting in that are not developed enough. And I think I'd like to study those. I would just like to study the feedback we give and then the people who rewrite and what that looks like. So that was one. And also people who have published with us more than once, what kinds of things they're learning from our approach. So anyways, we use the research processes to make the decisions and to go forward with.
And if you haven't already, activity. If you haven't picked it up, the four of us, we really, really like each other. We are close friends. We have been for many years. And so we're kind of like a family, even though two of us are in the far north and two of you are in the south of the U.S. anyway. But there is this kind of relational chemistry that I think makes this thing go and has for many years and will continue into the future. So I don't think that can be dismissed. This isn't just a business operation or some kind of a contractual arrangement. The four of us really care about each other and about the work we do.
And we've really worked hard and successfully to surround ourselves with folks who are really, really good and invested as well. So, yeah. So our reviewers, editors, you know, that group is, they're sensational.
And that's something that we felt that we kind of had, neglected a bit in terms of our community of our reviewers and our editors. And that's one of the reasons that we're now the co-editors in chief, to the idea of helping me help you all to learn this trade and to think of different ways that you can participate in the community. So one of the things that we've been thinking about is how can we help these authors even before they're writing? How can we help them, from the very first steps? You know, sometimes we'll see where the design, and there it looks like more of a hypothesis-controlled design. They see that they want to prove something, and qualitative is not that great for that. I mean, you're trying to discover, not discover what you already thought was there, you know, versus being more open. Because that's a style, but that's where we're emphasizing. And so we started saying, well, you know, we have authors from around the world. We have our reviewers and our editors around the world. Is how to energize that international network. You know, I think about how many different papers we've gotten from Indonesia, how many different universities in Indonesia we've gotten at least one paper. You know, and I say, okay, we got papers from 106 different countries, but probably a couple thousand different universities are represented in that, and let alone who's reading our papers in that. And how do we build upon that network? We're talking about what we wanted to talk about today. And I said, hey, let's share these ideas with our community. We got them all here now. Let's share it. It'll be up on the videos, it'll be podcast to kind of say that there's kind of that invitation. And I'll let Sally describe a little bit more about the model we're kicking around, but how do we take advantage of our network that's already there and that we've hopefully enriched and enhanced the skills of these writers and to help that next generation of students and beginning researchers to produce better quality work. So, Sally, why don't you talk a little bit about the model we're kicking around?
Again, we were looking at the different patterns, some of the difficulties with language, some of the authors that were enjoying the process and learning so much and returning. And so one of the things we're thinking about is developing, and I've been recruiting for this already, what we're calling regional leaders. And those would be folks who have published with us and who are learning and who are expanding their knowledge of qualitative inquiry and probably teaching it at universities as well. But they would be a go-to person in their own country for authors to go to, so that when there were questions and confusions, those folks could talk to each other in their home language and skip the confusions sometimes that happen as we try to only work in English, and that is our limitation for sure. Regional leaders could also help us with maybe supplying some workshops for students, for new professors, because I think that's who we work with probably the most, are the newest, not exclusively, but many new professors, and they're, you know, they're looking toward promotion and but we'd like to spread it. So this regional leader thing is something that we were starting to take a look at and invite people to do. And then we'd still be involved with them. And maybe we would do some workshops online, or maybe we would travel as a small group to different areas of the world to have some workshops and maybe pick up some of what Ron used to do a lot. And those were mentoring sessions.
Let me give you an example. I know Norma's here from South Africa, and her writing colleague, partner, Francis from Uganda, you know, has done some stuff, very interesting ideas have published in TQR. And I'm just thinking, like, with somebody like Francis, who is in Uganda, he could, and he obviously loves qualitative work and has done great community development stuff with qualitative. Maybe he could become the go-to person in Uganda for other researchers who want to learn to do it and speak the local language. We could support Francis to be the kind of resource that his colleagues need in that region, in that culture, in that language. We've also this last summer went to Rwanda for a conference, and we met a young fellow there who's very interested in qualitative. And so we've been working, Sally's been working a lot with him to try to shore him up and give him mentorship and support so that he could be the go-to person for people who speak Kirawandan and want to do qualitative work. So this is a way that we've been thinking about trying to overcome our language limitation of only being English speakers.
So that's the kind of thing is to not just see that it's an individual at a particular university, but they have their connections, they have their networks. But unless you switch that on, unless you think about that, and I always say the word empowerment, people have their own abilities and that, but it's like maybe just introducing the possibility and to show that we have confidence, that we believe that, your country, the political differences, the geographical differences, in the type of therapy that we do, it's kind of a solution-focused, positive type thing. And therapists need to realize that when that client is in the room, they've done like 5 or 6 things very positive already, right? They felt like there's something they needed to work on. They decided to work on it. They decided to try to find a solution. They found a therapist. They scheduled an appointment and they showed up. Showing up is important. And when you think about all the steps that an author took, we just see it when the paper comes through the portal, but all those steps that they took that other people did not take. And we feel that's the kind of courage, the type of belief in self. And, we know why authors submit their papers to us. They like our developmental process. They like that we're broad in terms of what we see as qualitative inquiry. And they have liked the papers that they have read. We know that's why they come here. And so how do we kind of build upon that so that this can spread even further in their respective countries? And, it's a challenge to teach this stuff. It's a challenge to get people to learn how to do qualitative data analysis, to do observations and field notes. This is not easy stuff. But how do we help people to persevere, to engage in this, and to be that resource? And, many years ago, I wrote a paper about kind of creating an Epcot type of research park, part amusement park, part, I call it edutainment. And you look at Epcot or any kind of park, a museum, some people want a guided tour. Some people like a ride, first stop, second stop. That's what they like. Other people, maybe they want a recording, they'll listen. They want, the docent they take with them. Or others just say, I just kind of like to wander around. And if you look at Epcot, you've got one part of Epcot, it's all the countries around that big globe, right? You could debate whether they're really those countries or someone's view of what Norway is or something like that. In the front part, you've got pavilions of different innovative areas. And I see Qualitative Report that way, that we're one of those pavilions, one of those innovative places that we may have, create some rides, create some acts, create some takeaways. But regardless of where people come from around the world, we have something for them and something they can take back to their world. And so that's what we're trying to do, and that's what we're going to kind of do going forward. And Adam, could you bring up what our call is for next year's conference? I like putting Adam on the spot. Dan, you want to talk a bit about this, Sally?
Yeah, we've been in this particular conference this year and in the last couple of years, we've been increasingly aware, and plus reviewing articles, increasingly aware of the limitations that people have to fight through to do their qualitative inquiry, to be supported, to achieve recognition. And so there's lots of elements that make that difficult. So as I said earlier, we talk about ourselves as being open access, which we are, but we're wondering about how open is that really? You know, there's issues of money and funding that makes doing this kind of research difficult, English language dominance, computer and internet availability, norms of higher institutions and professions, academic language conventions, which makes qualitative inquiry not so accessible to practitioners of the world, and then differential abilities to read, write, see, and hear. So there's others, but we just thought maybe we should focus on ways in which qualitative inquiry could be expanded and be made available to more populations all over the globe. So to look for places where qualitative research is not currently strong or available, and to wonder why, and are there some ways that we could make it more available by some other formats, some other ways of thinking. So that was seemed to be just kind of an evolving theme over the last couple of years. And Adam kind of put that title together, which I think is kind of appropriately provocative.
I would say another kind of origin story of this is it's a combination of things. But in our own therapy work, we were looking at social justice issues and how to speak about it in terms of people's personal lives and transformations and changes made. And I had a little, few little interviews with my editorial team, asked them where they thought qualitative research was going. And they said in the areas of justice and I noticed at this conference, there were several sessions about decolonization and participatory action research as liberatory. And so we also want to start helping folks infuse that and put that or make that a centerpiece of their studies as well. So again, these are all the things keep floating around in our heads and that we're noticing and that we're paying attention to and that we're experiencing. And so that's also part of this theme. And I think a continuation of some of the presentations that I attended this year.
As social work professors, we've known for many years that lots of community-based research, which involves qualitative and sometimes mixed methods, is happening all over the world, many times in Africa and in Latin America. And it doesn't get published because the people who do that kind of work are not primarily interested in publishing. They're primarily interested in doing that work because it helps people. They're doing it as a practice to kind of improve their communities. And so for those of us who are academics, we always think in terms of publishing papers, but we think that there's a lot of qualitative community-based work that is going unnoticed because it's not necessary for those practitioners to publish. And we're wondering if there's a way that we could make those projects more accessible to other people, not so that you can build a dossier of all of the articles you've written, but because that work deserves to be shared in ways that other people in the world might be motivated and excited about it. So this is a very interesting theme for us, and we hope that engages with you and many people to kind of take a fresh look at the global reach of qualitative, where it is and where it could be, and maybe even where it should be.
And we are also hoping that this is at least a tickler, if not a really provocative pull for you to join with us, again, to develop bigger, more expansive ways, not huge, but more expansive and effective ways to come together as a community and to make some differences in our world. That's our pitch.
And so I can see us going forward. We do calls for papers. We do calls for abstracts, and we'll probably do calls for mentors in terms of doing that. And there's different ways that people can participate. You know, sometimes it's helping to develop great tools. One of the things that we've been looking at is that we probably have produced maybe 30, 40 papers about interviewing. And they're kind of distributed all over the journal, and people find them and download that. But what if we turn them into learning objects and put them together, almost kind of like a periodic table, you know, doing interviews, doing different kinds of interviews, evaluating the outcomes of interviews, and then maybe pairing them up with articles where someone really presented the results of an interview study very well. They described how they did it. And maybe people evaluate, like Sally was saying, what's really good best practices for reporting that. So all of a sudden, you're starting to put together some resources. And that's all maybe someone needs, is to put those pieces together, but then also to find when people are innovative and how they've used those tools. It's kind of like USAID, you know, it can be overly heavy-handed. Here's how to use the pump versus how would you use the pump in your country? You know, what's the best ways for doing? What are your innovations? And to learn from that. In family therapy, in the United States, it was completely changed by contributions from Argentina and Australia and Europe and all over, this openness, and really changed what we were doing rather than the kind of our just indigenous folk style of talk therapy. And we really believe that's what's going on with qualitative. So not just pushing this out, but making sure we want to know, what did you do to make this product better? And so that's kind of where we're kicking the ideas around. And I don't know, maybe we've got a few minutes where people could share your reactions to it, things we were not thinking about. Was the call clear? You know, it's a bit of a call for action. So what are your thoughts about this?
There's lots of chat in the chat room, but maybe somebody would like to speak with their voice.
Well, I see Caroline has asked whether TQR has considered developing an open access journal where a manuscript draft ready for peer review is published, with the focus being an open community review process. Mm-hmm. Maybe you should speak to that.
We've done this before in a smaller way. We've taken a paper that's been submitted with the permission of the author or authors to have it be reviewed by a class of qualitative researchers in a university. And so they took the real paper on in real time to try to offer helpful comments in the review process. But that's just a smaller version, I think, of what you're suggesting. Maybe this could be more widespread to the TQR community to offer ideas and suggestions on papers that are first submitted. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting idea. Certainly one we could think about.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it came from Caroline Crawford.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody had their hand up.
Yeah.
Oh.
Was it Louise?
No.
Umi?
No, I didn't. It was Umi Jasmine, yes, and I just thought maybe that was lost in the conversation. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, I actually wanted to say that through my I'm a PhD student, and my research is research context is in Bangladesh, and when I was conducting my research, I found that the standard ethical guidelines, that some of those are not applicable in our culture, and also the methodology also need to be a bit reformed, modified. Mm-hmm. So, and I wrote a paper on the methodological and ethical values, depending on my findings in that cultural context. And I got, my paper got rejected from 5 journals already. So I felt that maybe, I don't know whether those journals that I submitted, they felt a bit challenged because it was challenging the standard ethical international ethical guidelines and the methodology that is very much well settled and well accepted. So I don't know, like, this is my experience as a researcher, if you can reflect on it a bit.
Mm-hmm. We've had a number of papers over the years where the authors are working in contexts where they do not have the standard IRB ethical approval systems in place. And so we still believe in wanting some attention to the ethical conditions of the work with the participants. But we don't say that if you don't have IRB, you're not allowed in. We just ask them to specify the steps they took as researchers to secure the safety and well-being of their participants. So I do think there's many ways that different cultures respond to elements of research, and ethics approval is one of them. And I think journals need to be responsive to the cultural expectations and the local university expectations of the authors.
Cheryl?
Yeah, hey, I'm not gonna turn my camera on because I just got back from the gym and I'm gonna clean up before I present this afternoon. So, but one of the things you said really resonated with me. So I thought I'd jump in. As you know, as Ron knows, and maybe the other board people know, I stepped away from doing as much work with TQR because I'm on a 3-year term as the editor of the Ohio Journal of Public Health. We have the same challenge with not being able to get practitioners who are a big part of public health in Ohio to develop their work into manuscripts because they don't have the time. Some of them don't have the training. They are intimidated by the idea of a review of research. So we've developed a short form thing called Public Health in Action that's a Q&A kind of a thing. I'm still waiting for some feedback from practitioners and board members before I implement this, but it's really just a sort of directed interview to give people a chance to talk about the good work they're doing with our hope that we can then figure out some way to, and this is not well thought out because we are a very low resource journal, but figure out some way to develop it into a brief report or a practice manuscript, but at least give people a chance to have a little publication, so to speak, that says, here's the program we're doing in this county, here's who's involved, here's who it's for, with a very directed kind of a format. And I'll let you know how that goes when we get it started, but that's something that we're trying to do to pull more authors in who are doing good work, but are not writing, because most of the papers that we get are from academic faculty who are writers, but aren't necessarily as engaged in active public health practice. Mm-hmm. So, you know, trying to balance the good current information that's out there with figuring out some way to publish it, you know, so that it's credible, but it doesn't put too much strain on people. So I just thought I'd throw that out there since it sounded like you were thinking about, you know, some other way to sort of pull in some other authors who are doing practice.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, unintentionally sometimes we, I don't know whether the word is, we disable people or we exclude them because we only have certain ways that someone can participate. And so I think that's really a great idea, saying, okay, let's kind of meet where you are and then what it would take a little bit. Because certainly they're in it, they're practicing, they're in the front lines, they're making a difference, and making their work public. That's what a publication is, right? Making it public, and being able to share that kind of information, and how to do it in such a way that that can help them to take that next couple of steps, a little bit of scaffolding. That sometimes that's all people need to be able to express themselves, and that's why Is it more of a podcasting thing? And so, you know, this is an invitation to you all. You know, we're like any other producers. We look at next month we need 12 papers, or hey, what about the workshops, or how about the podcast, and so forth. Is that, and you know, I'll put Adam on the line here, that reach out to Adam with your ideas about how we can, you know, can continue this expansion, to continue this enhancement of how we're being inclusive and to be able to bring people in. So we get to folks all the time, you know, that I read this book. Can I do a book review? Sure, you know, that's great. And so we're getting authors from around the world. Now, sometimes the book that they're reading is a few years old because that's what they have access to in their country. But it's still a good book. There was a singer-songwriter in Texas, and he wrote this album that everybody loved. And they kept saying, hey, when are you going to write the new album? He said, what was wrong with the first album? So, you know, sometimes, you know, a good book is a good book. And so, but it gives that person a chance to express that. To look for, we got a really cool review coming up where the title in the review is, you know, thank you to the authors. And I want to share my, you know, my gratitude about your book. And that's what the book review is. It's kind of a cool thing that they love the book so much, they wanted to write a book review about it. So those things just kind of tickle me when people find very creative ways of expressing their joy of learning. And it's contagious. I really think it is. Mm-hmm. Any other comments? Oh, go ahead.
Hi, this is Rama. Can you hear me?
Yeah, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good. I had a shout out to you earlier. Hope you can hear me.
Thank you. I could hear you. And I hope you keep feeling better soon, Ron. I want to tell my story of how I got into publishing in Qualitative Report. And also, it's going to be a 1 minute story. So, and also become a published author. When I was a first professor, I joined on tenure track. I was under so much tension to publish. And my dean told me about Qualitative Report. And I sent my first article, and it was rejected only because I didn't apparently confirm to the TQR rubric guideline. I called Ron, and I said, I didn't even know about the rubric, and I submitted again. I'll try my best to confirm to the expectations. And of course, he said yes, and my first article was published. I love being with the qualitative TQR community. Thank you so much, Ron and Adam. The other thing I wanted to suggest was when you're talking about publishing stories from the field, that's exactly what a section of our journals could look like, you know, stories from the field. You can create poems, you can create drawings, you can have other representations. Of course, it's all in the arts-based research too, but a separate section, I've seen some journals doing that, even a medical journal does that. They have a stories from the field section. That's where the other undocumented work, important work, could be showcased. Thank you for allowing me to speak.
Oh, thank you. And we do a lot of that. I mean, Sally we're talking with the author saying, hey, you know, before it was probably Skype, but hey, let's talk and kind of walk through, because it's a challenge if everything is just writing and back and forth and so forth. So we always try to find different channels in which to communicate. And, you know, it's really a pleasure to publish your stuff, Ron. It's really, you know, your insights and the way that you bring out, there's always a strong emotional quality to your work. And, you know, we've had some conferences where that's been our theme. And it's like every session, people are crying, you know, it's because we kind of bring that out. It was really nice to be able to bring that kind of emotional response even to the written form. So I see Adam has popped back. He had to put out a fire and came back in. So I know we're kind of running a little bit long with this, but any last words, Sally, Dan, Adam?
No, just for me that you all, it won't be next week, but you all will be receiving some more information about the regional leader initiative coming from us. We'll have a website for it. We'll have some information and what that includes, hopefully in the next few weeks.
I just want to say thanks. Already my mind is spinning and it's only 8 a.m. So this is great.
Thank you all so much. Enjoy the rest of your day. Thanks. If you want a little bit more of us, we will be presenting this afternoon. What time is it, Adam? It's the editorial board meeting?
From 4 to 5.
4 to 5, okay. Yep. Hey, did you find out how many countries were represented?
not countries, but I did post the list of all of the universities and affiliations in the chat earlier. So there was over 100. So I mentioned that I'll work on putting together a chart that maybe we can include in our post-conference email showing representation from the different countries.
Great.
Yeah, thank you all so much. I'll see you in Zoom, and hopefully you can stop by this afternoon and hear what's going on as far as the editorial board is concerned. Have a great day and see you soon.